And this is KPCW. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. We've got 31 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City, mostly sunny skies. And Heber City reporting 36 degrees with sunshine. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Thomas Giboy. Good morning.
Happy Tuesday to you. Hope that your day is going on well. And weather-wise, it should be a pretty nice day throughout the Wasatch back. And it'll be a little bit calmer compared to what we saw yesterday, but it will be a little bit cooler compared to what we saw yesterday as well. We'll see a daytime high come in at 51 degrees, which is a little bit below where we should be for this time of year, mostly sunny through the first half of the day. But we will start to see increasing clouds by this afternoon with our winds out of the northwest. So kind of a cool and quiet day today. And then overnight lows tonight will be dropping to around 33 degrees in Park City and could drop maybe just a little bit below freezing down in the Heber Valley. As we go through the second half of the work week, we do have two systems that will brush the northern half of the state. So I'm not expecting too many impacts, especially when it comes to wet weather, but we will stay a little bit unsettled and we'll trend a little bit cooler. Tomorrow is likely the coolest day of the week. We'll only see a daytime high of around 45 degrees in Park City, so definitely cool for this time of year. And there will be a 20% chance of seeing showers, and depending on what time we see the showers, we could see rain or snow, but as mentioned, nothing that's going to be too significant. Wednesday night, likely going to be the coldest night of the week, as we drop into the middle 20s throughout the Wasatch back. And then on Thursday, it should look and feel very similar to what we find today as high pressure builds in. Mostly sunny to partly cloudy skies, a daytime high right around 50 degrees. Then our next week, disturbance brushes by the northern half of the state on Friday. Really won't drag in any cooler air, but we will see at least a 30 to 40% chance of showers, mainly in the afternoon hours, but we'll keep tabs on that with that daytime high coming right around 50 degrees in Park City. Then between Friday night and Saturday, that system moves away and we'll see calm conditions as we begin the weekend. And Saturday is likely going to be the warmest day of this next 7-day stretch, where we see a daytime high come in at 61 degrees, mostly sunny skies. And the reason why we're going to warm up so nicely is because our winds will be out of the south. Unfortunately, it looks like the warm and quiet conditions might not last too long, because forecast models are now becoming a little bit more optimistic that we'll move back into a more unsettled and cooler pattern as we round out the weekend and move into early next week, Leslie.
Okay, Thomas, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the Local News Hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Manager Shane Scott, taking a look at Wednesday's County Council agenda. The founder and executive director of the Nepal Cleft and Burn Center, also owner of Foothill Oriental Rugs, Jim Weber, with details on this year's annual fundraiser. And the Figure Skating Club of Park City president and spring show co-chair Taylor Knight is joined, along with skaters Autumn Boyd and Austin Knight, talking to us about the club's production of A Tale of Belle and the Beast on Ice. That's happening this weekend. Taking a look at some local news, neighbors who want to deny tech billionaire Matthew Prince a permit to build a new 11,000 square foot home above Park City's Treasure Hill will make their arguments to a 3-member panel this evening. KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports the meeting at City Hall at 5 o'clock has the national media's attention.
The Park City Follies got the spotlight in the Wall Street Journal over the weekend as part of a report on the feud stemming from Matthew Prince's home plans. Most of the attention has focused on Sasha and Mocha, two Bernese Mountain Dogs owned by Eric Herman and Susan Fredston Herman, Prince's next-door neighbors. The couple filed an appeal with Park City in March to block the Cloudflare CEO's home, which was approved by a split planning commission. Prince has filed two separate lawsuits against the Hermans since the appeal. One lawsuit claims the two dogs have aggressively approached, chased, and harassed people on the Prince property. Herman told KPCW he felt the WSJ story missed the point, which is the, quote, intimidation of a city by a billionaire. Prince said the lawsuit against the dogs is necessary to protect his family. Eric Herman said he received a call from Summit County Animal Control last week saying they had received a complaint from a neighbor about Sasha and Mocha. Summit County Animal Control would not confirm if a complaint was filed. The couple said they've never heard concerns about the dogs prior to the lawsuit. Prince's attorney, Bruce Baird, said the other lawsuit filed against the Hermans over a protruding rock wall is nothing more than a simple property dispute. The fight between the neighbors was also recently covered in Bloomberg. That story took aim at Prince's purchase of the park record in 2023, which followed his attempt to push a bill that would benefit his home plans through the Utah legislature. A new chapter in the conflict could begin Tuesday, when Park City's newly formed appeal panel may decide if Prince's 11,000-square-foot home can be built. The Hermans, along with eight other co-appellants, claim the Park City Planning Commission failed to properly apply the land management code when voting on Prince's proposal. Appellants have the burden of proof under the city's review process. Prince's attorneys and a staff report compiled by the planning department contends the commission acted appropriately, and the appeal should be rejected, allowing Prince to break ground. Tuesday, the panel could affirm the commission's decision, reverse it, or continue the vote to a later meeting. The meeting starts at 5 p.m. in council chambers at City Hall. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Well, the Summit County Council meets in work session Wednesday, starting at 2:30 at the County Courthouse in Colville. In the studio with the meeting preview, Summit County Manager Shane Scott. Good morning, Shane.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's see, here on the other mic there. There we go. First up, a discussion of next year's revenue sources. This is going to be an hour-long conversation. Is it good news, or are we talking tax increase here?
Can both be the answer? As you know, we staff and especially the manager's office recommended a truth and taxation increase last year. And the council went through a great exercise of delaying projects and cutting, and we ended up not going through, at least for general fund and municipal services fund. But this exercise is trying to get ahead of that process. So as we go through the budget, we're probably not starting until June. But council wants to know what are our options as far as not raising taxes last year is going to put us in a position where we really need to look at that carefully this year. So we've had some things happen with the legislature. We've also done some lobbying for some additional funding resources, and we want to talk about all of that. What are our options this year? And it's probably focused a lot around the rural hospital tax, which is a 1% tax that we do qualify for, and if we did that, how much could we generate, what would it be used for, and what would be the process of putting that on the ballot? That's what we want to talk about tomorrow.
Well, it sounds like rural hospital tax, you need to talk about a hospital. Where's the hospital?
Our hospital does qualify, provides some emergency medical services that does qualify. So that term is kind of thrown around there, but we do qualify for that.
The Park City Hospital, uh-huh. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Isn't that within Park City limits?
Well, it's in the county, and I don't know exactly. I don't think it needs to be in the city or the county. It can be in just the county geographic area.
All right. So what do you know that it could be spent on if you were to put that on the ballot and collect?
It kind of mirrors a lot of the mitigation efforts we're trying to make when it comes to visitor impact on us. So landfill is one, and as you remember, last year that landfill cell was something we've put off and we'd like to fund this year. As well as that, emergency medical services, both fire and police, search and rescue. So a lot of the impacts we're feeling and looking at how to fund. As you remember, we had a change to our emergency medical services and how we fund it last year, which caused a lot of the pinch that we were proposing for fiscal year 24. So a lot of the areas we're concerned about could be funded by this rural hospital tax.
So it would require a vote of the people, huh?
It would. We'd have to get that on the ballot for November. I think the deadline to do that is September. Council would have to pass a resolution to do so.
And it's a sales tax, so how would that work then?
It's up to 1%, and it's not on food. According to what we've looked at, it would be paid for about 50-50 by local residents and visitors. So just over 50% would be paid by outside visitors to our community.
And it would raise how much money?
The full 1% would raise about $30 million. That would be an option. I can't imagine that the council would want to go that far. We have in a report looked at about around $12 million that we could easily spend on this. So that would reappropriate money from general fund or from municipal services fund that are feeling a pinch to fund with this other revenue source.
So you wouldn't have to take the entire 1%? You could say it's going to be 0.25%?
Correct. Yes, we could. I think in Matt's staff report, he is looking at 0.5%, just a 0.5%, keep it easy for easy math. I think that raised around $15 million.
All right. So everybody's property values have gone up over the last several years. We're all paying more taxes than we were a few years ago. And I understand that if I pay more, you get to pay less. I mean, just based on property values. But you do get to keep money from new growth. So where's all that money going? I mean, there's a ton of growth happening.
A new growth is a major generator. Sales tax tends to go up as well, and that's mostly around the cost of doing business. It costs more. As we took on last year, I think the 910 and the Ur Ranch, those acquisitions not only cost money to purchase but also to maintain and to manage. We've had some litigation increases. We had the Housing Authority one in fund last year. We were trying to do some things with childcare and senior services. So all of those items are coming up. We've got some things on the horizon for next year that are concerning. BRT is something we're always talking about. Everything we don't do today is going to cost more tomorrow. Just things do not go down in value and in cost. And so we're always looking at additional revenue sources to be able to fund those. And you bring up property taxes. That's a key component to what our discussion is going to be tomorrow, because the council didn't raise taxes last year because they do know that everybody's feeling the pinch, and they acknowledge that, and it is a challenging thing. So if this rural hospital tax can come in and be paid for with half of it paid for by visitors, we're very interested in looking at that.
Yeah, I still don't get it. I mean, so who got the tax breaks? Because I mean, if my taxes have gone up 40% over the last 5 years. Who's getting the break on that 40%?
So you're talking about how if your values go up, mm-hmm. well, it's actually not, it's really not, people can get a tax break and they can get less, but usually what happens is as your values go up, the rate actually goes down. So the revenue, so what we collect from you should stay the same. Now, that doesn't always, if we don't raise taxes, in theory, now every single home is different, so you can't say, but across the board, in theory, if we don't raise taxes, if we don't go through truth and taxation, as your values go up, your rate goes down. And it's not a one-for-one, so it can be different. And we have so many entities, taxing entities in our community that, if Basin Rec or the Park City Fire goes through truth and taxation, your rate, your value will go up. So your values will go up, and the rate will also either stay the same or go up as well.
Yeah, certainly the school districts.
School district has mm-hmm. been a major player in that as well.
All right. Let me see. There's also this Impacted Communities Tax Act. What would this do for the county?
Impact Communities Tax Act? Is that part of Matt's... Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember what we maybe called that. Impact community is it? It's not resort communities, because resort communities tax was also something we were looking at.
Well, maybe that's what he's calling the rural hospital tax.
That might be exactly. And then I apologize if I don't really know the real name, but what I call it is probably the rural hospital tax.
Okay.
That's probably it.
Got it. Let's see. The council at 3:40 will convene as the Behavioral Health Local Authority. When did this cohort get formed? What do they oversee?
Well, according to Aaron Newman and Leslie, I'll be honest with you. This is wrapping my head around behavioral services has been the hardest thing I've probably done since I've been here in a year and a half. It's so complicated the way it's funded, the services we provide. I've sat down with Aaron Newman and legal and Phil Bondurant in so many meetings, and we're working on so many different things in that department. It's been a real challenge, but. I think my understanding is the council has always been the behavioral health local authority. They act in that capacity. Usually they take several actions a year, not a whole lot, but in this case he's got three back-to-back items. I think one is a 5-year contract with UT Tech to extend that. He's wanting the local authority to adopt an area plan. And there's an extension on, I think, school-based mental health services that he's looking at as well. And we're also in negotiations for what the future of mental health services looks like in the county with Huntsman Mental Health Institute and HMHI. And it's just a real moving target constantly. This will probably be the first of several visits that Aaron makes to the county council.
All right, and as you mentioned, it's that mental health plan for health, mental health and substance abuse. That expires in June. So the plan is then to renew that?
Those negotiations are ongoing. I think the current proposal that he's presenting tomorrow is just to extend the contract so we have a little bit more time to continue to vet that out. But I think we're going through all the way through December if we pay $50,000 a month, and then it increases to $75,000.
All right. And Is the contract that they want more money? Is that what's going
well,
on here?
Well, yes,
and
they
how
do.
Much?
They do, but in their defense, they're currently losing money, and they're trying to offset their costs. I think they've been a good organization, and they know that this is an important service to provide. Obviously, Huntsman does a lot of great things throughout the state in lots of different ways, but. That's how much is really up for debate. We've talked about some different funds. The council actually put in, I think, $300,000 in the fiscal year 24 budget for this year to put this in there to go towards this effort. So what the future looks like is probably still up in the air, but we're hoping to put this to bed here in the next month or two.
Yeah, so is that, I mean, how it works, right? They come in with a low bid, you take them, and then prices go up. I mean, just like we've seen with ski passes, right?
That can be the case. I believe some of this is the, and again, I wasn't here, so I can't speak to this really well, but there was another organization here providing this service before Huntsman. I think it was Valley is what it was called.
Valley Mental Health.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Valley Mental Health. And so there was the transition from them to this. So I think there's some refining in the services. But that's one thing that we talked about extensively as we've talked through this is, are we providing a level of service that we're happy about, and do we want to, is cutting that service on the table? And each one of the council members, if we met with them individually or talked to them just even casually, they're really not interested in cutting the service. We think we have to provide a level of service that our community expects, and we value and prioritize mental health education and services in our community, and I think we're going to continue to do that no matter what that takes.
All right, there is a pretty detailed report in there, and people can find out more
Absolutely.
By taking a look at the staff report. Let's see, the council will also be convening as the Board of Equalization. Are you finally done with all of the property tax appeals?
I don't think we're quite done, but they keep. I thought we were done maybe a month ago, and they still Board of Equalization is still continue to meet. But I think we're winding down. We have gotten a couple of extensions, as I think I've mentioned here before. But we're hoping to do things differently next year. And Cindy and her office, we've added some staff and even some temporary staff to her department. So we're hoping to get through these soon.
All right. At 5:15, a discussion and possible action on a request by the Sundance Institute regarding a $130,000 county-sponsored project. So what's the project?
Well, what happened here is that Sundance had has historically requested some rap cultural funds, and they missed the deadline in this case. And so rap cultural, the board has met, they put together their recommendations. And we're trying to not penalize those that applied for rap cultural and made the deadline. Now, in Sundance's defense, we did move the deadline up a month. We did that because we weren't meeting a state code statute, so we were trying to make sure we met that. They missed the deadline. They've acknowledged that. We'll probably talk about that tomorrow and what's going on. So we're trying to see if there's another way we can meet this need. And one of the ideas we have is to maybe meet that need through restaurant tax funds. So they'd have to use it appropriately if they were given those funds. But Leslie, as you may or may not know, when we budget for a restaurant tax, 90% of that goes towards the applications that people make towards restaurant tax grants. 10% of that is set aside for what we call county-sponsored projects. So we've used that to fund North Summit Rec was one example of that. And there's $450,000 that we budget every year, and we usually don't spend, and we just kind of save. So we're asking the council, would you look at that $457,000 that we've budgeted for fiscal year 24 and put that towards a request from Sundance to fund these local community programs if they meet the restaurant tax guidelines. So it's kind of complicated. We're trying to be a good partner. It would be naive of me to say that we're not in a kind of a tenuous situation with Sundance right now. We want to make sure they know how important our partnership is, and they're 40 years here in our community, and what can we do to help, especially since it's the funding a local community program.
Yeah, and I know the change in the deadline came as a surprise to several nonprofits, including KPCW. Why no heads up that the law had changed? That would have been easy enough to do, no?
According to our staff, they did send emails, and I think that was another situation, at least with Sundance. Now, I don't know if that worked for everybody. We do expect everybody to look at the deadlines and be aware of that. Missing a deadline is not necessarily on the staff. It's on the organization itself. But We did send out some emails. I think there has been some change in some of the staff at Sundance, at least, that those emails didn't get to the right individuals. I think the individual I've been speaking to is relatively new. So I think there's just a lot of miscommunication on that, and I think we did make an effort to send emails to let people know, but that didn't reach, at least in the Sundance case.
Yeah, well, maybe we send it to through the mail?
Maybe.
Right? Maybe. I mean...
And I also was thinking that if we do send an email, maybe we request a notification that email has gone through. So.
Yeah. Well, I guess my question would be, I mean, if this had been, let's use KPCW as an example. I mean, would you be so accommodating?
It's a very fair question, and I would like to say yes. I never want to do this for one organization, and we wouldn't do it for another, and that's what we've said. We've said that when I've talked to council, that's been my refrain, is let's not do something here that we wouldn't do for anybody else. I do genuinely believe that they missed this deadline. They didn't just forget to do it or put it off. That they had an application all put together. We have done this in the past. I can't tell you exactly what the scenario was, but I talked to our legal department. And they did say we have made this accommodation in the past, not to Sundance, but to another organization. But you're right; it gets very sticky. When is it appropriate to do it? Is it one that we're just in negotiations to stay in our community with? What does that look like? And I'm sure those things will come up tomorrow as well.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
I don't think so. We got a great agenda tomorrow, and we're excited to hit some of those items.
Okay, Shane, thanks so much.
Leslie, thank you.
Shane Scott, Summit County Manager. Summit County native Kevrian Richens performed her way into the top 8 of American Idol on Sunday, but has found the end of the road last night after performing the song Traitor by Olivia Rodrigo. Last night was the judges' song contest, when judges Luke Bryan, Katy Perry, and Lionel Richie each selected a song anonymously for the top 8 to perform. Katy had the most songs chosen by the artist to perform. America voted and determined the top 6, leaving the judges to save the artists that they wanted to see in the top 7. Kevrian was eliminated. The 6 artists going on include Jack Blocker, Abby Carter, Julia Gagnon, Tristan Harper, Will Mosley, and Emma Russell. The judges saved McKenna Faith Breinholt to make it to the top 7 for next week's contest. And High Valley Transit is taking over the Kimball Junction to Main Street Express bus route, formerly covered by Park City's 10 White Express. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has details.
High Valley Transit's new 10X bus route started running Sunday, traveling along State Route 224 between the Old Town Transit Center and the Kimball Junction Transit Center. The express line only has 2 stops, the Canyons Village Transit Center and Fresh Market and Park Avenue condos. The bus operates every day between 6 a.m. and midnight, running with a frequency between 10 and 20 minutes. It serves as a replacement to Park City Transit's 10 White Express. High Valley Transit formed in 2021 and planned to take over the route in May 2024 per an interlocal agreement signed between Park City and Summit County. High Valley's existing 101 route runs along the same line as the 10X, but it has more stops and stretches farther to Deer Valley and Jeremy Ranch. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
The Nepal Cleft and Burn Center opened 10 years ago in Kathmandu, Nepal. It was founded by Park City resident and owner of Foothill Oriental Rugs, Jim Weber, a longtime underwriter here at KPCW. He joins me now in the studio. Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Leslie.
So why don't you give us the Reader's Digest version of how this nonprofit organization came to be?
I'm in the Oriental Rug business. I've operated Foothill Oriental Rugs since 1985 down in Salt Lake City, and I decided I wanted to go trekking in Nepal because I was buying rugs in India, and it's only a 45-minute flight to Kathmandu. So I flew up to Nepal and did the Annapurna trek, and while I was there, I met some Tibetan refugees who had a carpet factory in Kathmandu, and I was in the rug business from Salt Lake City, and you know, and we became friends, and a few years later, we started a venture called Tibet Rug Company. We manufacture Tibetan rugs in Kathmandu. They're manufactured by Tibetan refugees. And then in subsequent years, I spent a lot of time in my factory in Kathmandu, and it's just an amazing place. It became my spiritual home. Nepal is the home of the term namaste, and we've all heard of namaste, and that's where that term came from. And it's just an amazing place in terms of spiritual energy. And it's also a very poor country. So I decided I wanted to give something back to that country, and I explored some options and settled on delivering medical services to the poor. And so we started a nonprofit in 2002. In 2014, we had the grand opening of a four-story, 16,000-square-foot hospital called the Nepal Clefton Burn Center. And it's the first teaching hospital in a country with a population of 30 million people that teaches Nepali surgeons to do these cleft lip and palate surgeries. And also burns are a huge problem in Nepal. And I didn't even realize the scope of the burns problem until we got this hospital up and running. But burns in third world countries where half the population cooks over open fires are a huge problem. Anyway, the Nepal Clefton Burn Center opened in 2014, and we have since become the leading burn treatment center in the country. In other words, if you suffer a catastrophic burn, your chances of survival are higher in the Nepal Clefton Burn Center than any facility in the country. So it's really, even though it's just a small grassroots organization out of Salt Lake City, it's really impacting the medical infrastructure of an entire country.
Yeah. So cleft lips, cleft palates, victims of burn, I mean, what, they can all be treated by plastic surgery? Is that what it's focused on?
Yeah, it's plastic surgery, mm-hmm. basically. But we don't do cosmetic plastic surgery. It's all reconstructive, life-saving and life-changing plastic surgery.
Yeah. How many patients do you see a year?
Oh, last year I think we had 450 burn patients. And our burn ward is overwhelmed. And there's an area in Nepal where we get, I mean, Kathmandu is the leading concentration of people in the country. It's the only really big city. But there's an area in southeast Nepal called Terai, down near the Indian border on the plains. And over the years, we've noticed we get most of our, the largest percentage of our out-of-area patients from this Terai area. So we procured land in Terai. And we're in the process of getting our second hospital in the ground in Terai.
Okay. So how much do you need to raise to get that hospital? I mean, is it out of the ground at this point, or?
We just finished the environmental impact study, mm-hmm. and we're going to get the footings in soon.
All right. And what's that going to cost to build that?
The building's going to be about 20,000 square feet. It's going to cost us about $1.5 million.
All right.
Which you can't build a warehouse for that in the States.
Right. So you're raising the money through these fundraisers?
We're raising the money through the fundraiser is our main source of income, because like I said, we're just a small grassroots organization, and we don't have a paid staff. I run it, and my staff at the rug store does a lot of support work, and I don't charge the nonprofit back. So, our fundraiser is really our main source of income. But we will solicit donations any way we can.
All right. So you've got a fundraiser coming up May 10th. Tell us about that.
May 10th. It's 2 weeks from Friday. It's our annual event, and I know Park City is like the home of fundraisers in Utah. There are a ton of fundraisers. This is a really fun event. We got a great venue this year. We're in the Natural History Museum near Red Butte Garden in Salt Lake. And we have a bus coming down, a free bus coming down for any Park City people who want to ride the bus.
All right. So give us an idea how the evening goes.
How the evening goes?
Yeah.
It starts off with a social hour, and then and we have a live and silent auction, and then we have... We try and keep the speakers short. I'm going to speak. Our lead physician from Kathmandu, Dr. Shankar Rai, is coming in for the event, and he will speak. And then we'll get the live auction going, and we have a great band, great food.
So is it Nepalese food?
It's not Nepalese food. No, it's kind of hard to get good Nepalese food catered in Salt Lake, but I mean you can do it. But this is really good quality food, and it's a caterer we've used every year for our event, and the people that come love it, and they're just, the food's great.
Yeah, so this Dr. Rye, he's the one that kind of runs the hospital there in Kathmandu. How did you find him?
I got connected with him through some physicians here in Salt Lake who are working with the nonprofit, and the way he was introduced to me is the physician that told me about him said, you need to meet Dr. Shankar Rai. He's impeccably honest, and he's your guy. And my next trip to Nepal, I tracked him down. I met him, and he's just an amazing person. He's probably the most Buddha-like person I've ever met. He has no ego. He's revered like a god in Nepal because he's served the poor for 30 years, and he's an amazing person.
I think I read that he's actually trained here in the U.S. and then did go back. I mean, he probably could have stayed here and made a lot of money.
Most doctors from third world countries, if they get the opportunity to come to the U.S., they will jump on it. He has had that opportunity. He could easily come here, but he's really committed to serving the poor of Nepal.
So who are you going to get then to run the other hospital in Terai?
He's got a staff. He's been training for years, and I let those people on that side deal with that because I can't run a hospital halfway around the world.
All right. So how much are tickets?
Tickets are $135. Great food, open bar, really good band, and it'll be a wonderful evening.
Yeah. How much are you hoping to raise?
Over $100,000.
Great. Yeah. And I think I saw on pictures of some of the silent auction items. You have a lot of stuff actually from the region there, huh?
Yeah, we have some great lodging packages. We have a really nice outdoor water feature that's donated by a company called Ore Design in Salt Lake. And we have some wonderful items.
Right.
We have an apartment in Paris. We have a beach cottage in Sayulita, Mexico. We have a four-night vacation package at a really nice resort in Costa Rica.
Okay. And it sounds like you have also worked out some kind of partnership with the University of Utah. Can you tell me about that?
Well, it's not a formal partnership, but we get a lot of support from physicians there. And I'll tell you, to run a burn center, it requires deep pockets. And even in a country like the United States, there may be only 30 really state-of-the-art burn centers in the country. The University of Utah has one of them. And we don't. We don't have a state-of-the-art burn center because we don't have deep pockets. But with the resources we have to work with, we have an amazing burn center. And for instance, we started Nepal's first skin graft program for taking skin from people and from cadavers. And it's a difficult thing in Nepal because people there believe in reincarnation, so they don't want the cadavers of their loved ones desecrated. So but we do have an up and running skin bank and the first one in Nepal.
Hmm. All right. Let's see. The tickets are what? Available online? Is that how you get them?
They're available online. You can go to the NepalCleftonBurnCenter.org, and it'll direct you to how to buy tickets. You can also call us at Foothill Oriental Rugs, 801-582-3500. We'll get you registered. And like I say, any Park City residents who want to come down, there's a free bus that comes down and brings you back.
Okay. Well, I don't have the facts in front of me, but I mean, just as many times as I've heard your voice on our airways, I think you, with maybe the exception of Jans and Cole Sport, are like the longest underwriter on KPCW.
I might be. Yeah, I might be. I go back a long ways.
Yeah.
And so I've been happy to support KPCW. It's a great part of the community.
We appreciate your support. Thanks. Anything else you want to let people know about it?
No, just if you've ever been interested in Nepal, it's this. Come to this event. You'll get to experience Nepal without the 30-hour flight, or if you want to support a really amazing little grassroots organization, that would be a reason to come to the event. We run a really cost-effective organization, and you never hear this kind of ratio, Leslie, but 95% of the donations we receive go to the project.
Okay, well, congratulations. Hey, thanks.
Thank you.
That's Jim Weber, again, founder and executive director of the Nepal Cleft and Burn Center and owner of Foothill Oriental Rugs. Well, Heber City police say six young people are headed to juvenile court after vandals caused thousands of dollars of damage at the local skate park. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has this update.
Police have charged six young people, ranging in age from 11 to 15, after a Southfield Park restroom was vandalized. Heber City Police Sergeant Josh Weishar says officers identified the juveniles from videos the minors recorded while defacing the park.
They recorded themselves lighting off fireworks and breaking things. All of them were charged with either the arson or criminal mischief. But they're all juveniles.
A 14-year-old and three 15-year-olds were charged with arson, accused of lighting fireworks inside a restroom at the park and burning toilet paper. Weishar says officers are still looking for one more person involved in that case. And an 11-year-old and a 12-year-old were charged with criminal mischief for allegedly breaking a sink and ripping the drain out of the wall. All six minors are being referred to juvenile court, which will determine the consequences if they're found guilty.
Could be anywhere from, realistically, some served time in juvenile detention or all the way down to some community service, some fines. It just depends on what the juvenile court wants to do with it.
He says these charges are for the most recent reports of vandalism at the park, but Heber police have responded to other incidents this spring, including fights involving older teens.
We tend to have issues there at the skate park and get called to there just because it's a gathering point, and sometimes people don't get along and they break things.
He says closing the park prompted the public to identify the culprits. Now it's up to the County Parks Department to determine when and how to reopen the skate park. Wasatch County Parks and Recreation Assistant Director Heath Coleman estimates the vandalism has cost about $75,000 to repair over the last year and a half, including labor costs. The department will hold a community meeting Wednesday to discuss the recent vandalism and address residents' concerns. It begins at 7 p.m. in the Recreation Center. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
The Figure Skating Club of Park City presents a tale of Belle and the Beast on Ice. It's happening this weekend in the studio with details. I have cast members Autumn Boyd and Austin Knight, along with the president of the club and co-chair of the spring show, Taylor Knight. Good morning. Thanks for being here with us.
Good morning.
So, Taylor, let's start with you. When and where is this happening?
This is happening this next Friday and Saturday. Friday night at 7 p.m., Saturday night at 7 p.m. There is also a matinee at 3 o'clock on Saturday. It's at the Park City Ice Arena, right next to the hospital.
All right, and tickets are still available?
Tickets are still available, yes. Yeah. You can go to the Figure Skating Club of Park City website, and there's a link on there to buy tickets.
Okay, so how many skaters are performing?
There are 82 skaters in this show. It's the biggest show we've had so far.
How many skaters do you have in the club?
There's over 100. All right. Actually, that's adults and kids, but this show is mainly for the kids.
All right, so it sounds like all of the kids are performing in some way or another, huh?
Yes.
Okay. Let's see, this sounds like, Autumn, that it's based on Beauty and the Beast?
Yes.
What's your role?
My role is Lumiere, and I am in the big VR guest scene with almost the entire club, or almost the entire group of kids in the entire show.
Yeah, so when you get 82 people, though, on that ice rink, it sounds like it's crowded.
Yeah. They're all lined up, and it's just a huge, big group of people that have to work together and figure out how to make it work and look good.
All right. It's been a while since I've seen Beauty and the Beast, but what's Lumiere?
Lumiere is the candle who sort of welcomes Belle to the castle, and he is like one of the castle characters, like with Cogsworth, and leads Be Our Guest.
Okay. Austin, what's your role?
I'm Mrs. Potts.
Okay. So you're on quite a bit?
Yeah, I'm on the ice a lot. I have a solo, and I get to skate to the iconic Beauty and the Beast while Beauty and the Beast are skating in the background doing their own waltz.
Okay. How long have you guys been rehearsing?
We've been rehearsing for the past week and a half-ish. We've been rehearsing almost every day for like 2 to 3 hours. And tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday, we have our tech rehearsal and our dress rehearsal.
Okay. So, Taylor, how do you... it sounds like herding cats here. I mean, how do you manage just that many skaters and, you know, doing that much on a hard surface?
So my role as a co-show chair is actually more of the behind-the-scenes stuff. I do the costuming, the set, the props, that type of stuff. The other co-chair does, like, the ticketing and all the tech side of it, maybe organizing the volunteers. The true heroes are the show directors, and there are the girl skating coaches, and they all just donate a lot of time and each split up the group numbers and teach choreography, and there's multiple things going on the ice all at once at the rehearsals. So it is a huge a huge job, but they do an amazing job at that.
Yeah, it sounds like, I mean, this is really an opportunity for the kids, the skaters, to kind of learn how shows like this are produced, because, I mean, this is where, I'm guessing, most of them end up, right? I mean, only a handful get to go to the Olympics.
Right, yeah. No, this is definitely one of the many avenues that the skaters can take in their skating careers. The show side of it is not for everybody, but this is a great opportunity for them to dabble in it, to see if it's something that they enjoy, and then they can go on to things like Disney on Ice later, or traveling with shows on the road and everything like that if they don't want to continue with their professional side of it.
Right. Or
their competitive side, I guess.
Yeah. And this sounds like that this is something everyone likes to do, huh? I mean, at the end of the show, what, just to kind of show off what you've been working on all winter?
Mm-hmm. The show is something that most of the skaters look forward to, because we have the spring show and the Christmas show, and it just, everybody looks forward to it because it's a time where it's not so stressful. Well, it's stressful, but it can be a time to have fun and focus on something else than very competitiveness.
Okay. Let me see. Tickets are how much?
We have tickets that start, I believe, the kind of obstructed view are as low as $5, on up to $25, $30, and you can actually sit on the ice. We have seats on the ice, so you get it up close and personal. I think chairs on the ice are $30, but again, you're right on the ice, and you actually get some interaction with the skaters at a certain part in the show, so it's a fun experience.
Yeah, so what's that like then, skating with people sitting there? Are they in your way?
They're not in our way, because we can learn to adapt to people around us, but sometimes it can make us, like, throw us off, like we have to fix our patterns for our jumps, but overall it's really fun. It gives us opportunities to actually interact with people than just up tall in the audience.
All right, so the thing with ice skating, I mean, it's about the tricks. I mean, what kind of tricks are we talking about here in terms of your guys' level?
There are a lot of doubles and triples. We have probably around 10 skaters who can do triples, and most of us just do doubles, but in group numbers, there'll be a lot of working together, some lifts, a bunch of synchronized spins, and these things we call pinwheels. We all link arms and we spin around in circles, and it's super fun.
Yeah. What's the most difficult trick for skaters your age?
For me and skaters my age, I think that the triples are definitely the hardest part, especially in show skating when you're in big costumes that you're not used to skating in. And, like, sometimes it's really hard to get jumps and spins to look like the same, like synchronized. So that's probably one of the hardest things to do with shows.
Well, name, I mean, there's like the sow cow, and there's another one too.
It's like sow cow, flips, loops, lutzes, axles. Lots of people are working on axles.
So what's of those, like the axles and the toe loop, and I mean the sow cow, what's the most difficult?
The axle is the only jump that takes off from forward. Mm-hmm. And all the other jumps take off from backward for the most part. Like, sometimes you rotate on the toe, but it looks a little different. And the double axel is probably one of the hardest. It's close to only, like, what, 5% that can do a double axel, the triple axel.
All right, that's interesting. So it's going forward. That's, mm-hmm. That's a pretty vulnerable position.
Yeah, there's only two people in the world who can do a quad axel right now.
Okay.
So it's pretty crazy.
All right. Anything else you want to let us know about the show?
It's going to be fun and entertaining for the whole family. So we also have a junior board that is going to be having a silent auction of items, fundraising.
And we're donating to Utah Youth Village.
It's a foster care.
It's foster care
in Salt Lake. So there'll be opportunity to help there too, as well as see a great show.
Okay, Taylor, Autumn, Austin, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
More than 50 local organizations are getting a financial boost thanks to $4 million in taxes from Summit County restaurants. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that includes historic mine preservation efforts and U.S. biathlon.
The Summit County Council approved the Restaurant Tax Committee's recommendations April 24th that distributed the $4 million pot to 53 organizations. 55 had applied, asking for over $5.3 million in total. The nonprofit Friends of Ski Mountain Mining History was one of the biggest recipients. The Historic Preservation Organization partnered with Park City Municipal to request $250,000 for Silver King Coalition Mine repairs. The tax committee awarded $200,000, which Sally Elliott, the organization's founder, says will finance window repairs and interior restoration of the mining structure, which is at the bottom of Bonanza Lift.
We're going to straighten the old window frames and put this lucite there so people can actually look in the windows and see what's there.
That'll happen next summer. This summer, the group is installing a new roof. Three other organizations received more than $200,000, including the Historic Park City Alliance, which is looking to market Main Street outside of Summit County. The others were the Park City Area Restaurant Association, receiving about $350,000, also for marketing, and the Park City Area Lodging Association, which got almost $400,000 for its Delta Airlines flight voucher program. First-time applicant U.S. Biathlon Association received about $108,000 to aid its move from Maine to Midway. U.S. Biathlon announced its offices will move across the country to Wasatch County last September. To receive a Summit County restaurant tax grant, organizations must demonstrate they'll drive tourism in the area and increase restaurant tax revenue. Priority is also given to new and developing organizations or events. The Sandoval Basin Recreation District and Wildman School of Discovery were the only organizations that didn't make the cut. The committee determined Basin Rec's request for treadmills and Wildman's gift card fundraiser didn't fit the grant's tourism focus. The pot of money has been growing each year from about $2.4 million in 2021 to around $4 million now. However, numbers show the growth trend has been slowing down. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
There were a lot of tears and cheers at the I Can Do Hard Things 5K fundraiser to support kids with special needs last weekend. KPCW's Amber Johnson has more on that.
Everyone was a VIP at the I Can Do Hard Things 5K on Saturday, and there was at least one celebrity in attendance. Curious George, the mascot, accompanied his buddy Ty Hendricks. Ty's mom, Abby, said her son eats, breathes, and sleeps that mischievous monkey.
Curious George came today to cheer him on. He thinks this race is just for him, but it is for all special needs children in Wasatch County. And Ty is visually impaired. He has autism and a rare genetic disorder that make life really difficult, but he is the most cheerful person and the funnest person you'll ever meet.
The race was Wasatch Peak's largest fundraiser. The Parents Empowering Abled Kids nonprofit is dedicated to helping facilitate recreational, educational, and employment opportunities for them. This is Gunnar Larson's first year with Wasatch Peak, and his mom Darcy said his favorite activity was learning to ski through the National Ability Center.
So this year we're working on getting the kids over the National Ability Center to do equine horses. We're also working on getting to Soldier Hollow to do activities, and Peak was able to buy several vans this year to help transport the kids, and that the special education teachers can drive them to the activities and arrange these field trips on their own.
The highlight of the weekend was a 100-yard dash for kids of all abilities. Some ran, some walked, some rolled, and most importantly, every single kid was celebrated as they crossed that finish line. Amber Johnson, KPCW News.
And the Park City Farmers Market will be back May 29th. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has more on the weekly event, and it's returning to its original location.
The Park City Farmers Market is moving from Canyons Village back to the first-time parking lot at Park City Mountain Village this year. The move is due to the construction of a new parking garage on the Cabriolet lot at Canyons. The first-time lot was the home of the market when it launched more than 20 years ago, according to organizer Volker Ritzinger. All of the products offered by vendors at the farmers market are verified to be non-GMO and free of pesticides. Ritzinger said business has been strong in recent years as people have become more focused on the quality of their food.
People get more educated about eating good food and eating natural and organic and non-sprayed stuff. And so the farmers markets are getting busier and busier all over Utah. You know, I work and help other cities start markets, and, you know, there's more demand for farmers markets, and everybody wants to see the local farmers getting out there. You know, and the more we promote farmers markets, the more farmers that will be growing good stuff because, you know, they all want to go out there. Nobody wants to do the wholesale anymore.
The Park City Farmers Market will be every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Ritzinger said he wants to extend to 6 p.m. to accommodate working folks, but we'll have to see if it can work. The market is no longer accepting applications for sellers this year. Over 60 vendors are signed up, including two new farmers from the Ogden area. There is no set closing date, but the market typically runs into the fall until farmers run out of product. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.